Hello, and welcome to the Faith and Science Podcast. My name is Todd Bublitz, and welcome back to the second Sunday of Easter for the week of April 7th, 2024. I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited to dig in this week's podcast, and I'm excited that we are in this Easter season. We can throw out the alleluias, the hallelujahs. We can bring that all out, and it's just an exciting time of year as we are entering into the beginning of this Eastern journey that we have for the next seven total Sundays, and then we have the day of Pentecost. But we're in this for a while, and it's so exciting. It's so fun. It's this moment of doubt and belief at the same time, which is so relatable to our own lives. How often it is hard for us to sometimes fully grasp what we are looking at, what we are doing within our own faith, what this all means. And I think this season of the year helps us really ground ourselves in the aspect that there is a lot of question, doubt, misunderstanding, unsureness that happens with this time of year. And I think the church year, with being able to walk through this, I think is such an important part. And I think it's helpful for us to stay grounded. So before we jump into this week's text, let's look back to last week's question, which was, where do you see resurrection on a daily basis? And we had a story come in, and it's been like a story I've talked about similarly on the podcast, on how someone messaged and talked about how they were getting rid of some old pansies and they were just throwing them away. And they now have this area called their dump pansies. It was a spot that they were thinking everything was dead, just getting rid of it. And the pansies came up. I have had multiple plants in our house that I thought were goners, but for whatever reason, kept watering and boom, they came back. I think the resiliency of nature is something that we oftentimes forget and we misunderstand. We don't fully grasp how hard it is at times for life to give up life. And I think when we look at our own lives, how often we will fight and be resilient within our own lives. Why would we think of anything else in God's creation any differently? And I think that it also gives us this idea and perspective of we have a resilient God. To have this long-term plan, to have these goals and aspirations that are much beyond us, I think sometimes is really, really helpful in us being able to comprehend and think about how this all comes together. So let's just jump into it. The text this week, we have a little bit some differencing things here because the first reading is out of the New Testament. It's one of the few Sundays of the year that we have our first reading is out of the New Testament. So let's enjoy that because that's a little bit of an Eastern thing typically that we have. So the first reading is out of Acts chapter 4, verses 32 to 35. And this is the disciples afterwards coming together. And this has kind of been after the resurrection, after in that period right around the ascension. The whole group of disciples, not just the initial 12, are gathered together and all being of one heart, all being looking for the common good. They are gathering together the different things that are needed and selling possessions to make sure that the things are taken care of and they're laying them at the apostles' feet as they are needed, making sure that the community is well taken care of is basically what we have in Acts 4. The psalm this week is Psalm 133, all three verses of it. And it's again this idea of how working in unity, being able to then recognize and having, they have in verse 2, the pouring of oil over the head into the beard of Aaron, which is this symbolization of the oil running down and making sure that that is being entrenched into a person. And that there is the Lord's blessing on everything that is going on. It is around them. It is surrounding them. The second reading or the epistle text is out of 1 John chapter 1, starting at verse 1, going to chapter 2, verse 2. This is a text that, depending on your church background, depending on what you're going through, there might be sections of this that are familiar, specifically looking at verses 8 to 10, because this is something that if your church does some type of order of confession and forgiveness, it's a typically a short forgiveness, confession of sin and forgiveness type of section here. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us, but if we confess our sin, and he who is faithful and just will forgive our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say we have not sinned, we make him a liar and the word is not in us. This idea of how we are brought together and united through what Christ did, but it's also this recognition of how we are trying to walk in the light, but yet how often we will stumble and fall astray. But again, that's the value of the unity of a group. It's the value of all of us being together. It's the value of us being able to live life together. And that is part of when what we're getting into here with this 1 John text. The gospel text this week is out of John chapter 20, starting at verse 19 to 31. This is a very familiar text. It happens basically every year right after this Easter Sunday, Resurrection Sunday, and unfortunately, it's probably Thomas's most famous section, and it's the moment where Thomas doubts. So you have all the disciples together, and Jesus appears to them. Peace be with you. The doors are locked. And the disciples are rejoicing, but they're also terrified, which makes total sense. Jesus says to them and breathes on them, receive the Holy Spirit. But when they are summarizing and thinking about it, Thomas is the one who isn't there. And so Thomas then says, unless I can see the mark in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe. A week later, they're all together. Thomas is there with him. Jesus appears again. And Jesus then is asking him to put his fingers in his hands and his hand in his side. And then Thomas says, my Lord and my God. Jesus then responds with, have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen but yet have come to believe. And then John continues on how there is many other signs of Jesus' resurrection and they're not written in this book. But this idea of how, what is the evidence that Thomas is needing in order to believe? And I think there is some definite things that are going on currently that I think we can easily take in and think about and be able to apply. And I think it helps us understand a little bit more what Jesus is coming from and where his disciples are at this moment, which I think helps us grapple with this in a new way, in a different way. So before we jump into how faith and science come together this week and we get into that, let's do our shameless plugs for Working Preacher. If you haven't checked out Working Preacher, I'd highly recommend it. Between their sermon brainwaves podcasts, their commentaries, their discussions, since I'm not an ordained minister, I use them on a weekly basis to help me give some different ideas, some different directions, some different ideas on how to look and approach these texts. It's a great resource over there. A lot of commentaries, a lot of just awesome stuff going on over there. So if you haven't checked out workingpreacher.org, I'd highly recommend it. I'd also highly recommend checking out the Revised Common Lectionary coming from Vanderbilt's Divinity Library. Not only do they lay out the text beautifully week to week, and that's what I use week to week, but they also have a lot of art, hymns, prayers, daily devotions, a lot of great places and things to be thinking about and ways to continue to be in the Word. So if you haven't checked that out and are looking at that on a week to week basis, I'd highly recommend that also. I'd also highly recommend checking out the Green Blades Preaching Roundtable and the Green Blades Rising Publications. These either weekly reflections or monthly newsletters go through and bring in a lot of urgencies and implications and ecological echoes that can be thought about and talked about in either a sermon text or just preparing for the text week to week. So if you haven't checked that out, it will be the first link in the show notes. I really enjoy it. If you are spending a half an hour with me week to week, you're really going to enjoy these different resources. So I'd highly recommend checking that out also. Finally, I'd also highly recommend checking out the Gus Davis Academy for Faith, Science, and Ethics, which is happening this year from June 15th through the 21st, 2024, How and Why We Sleep, Revelations in Rest. And as we are now entering into the month of April, my discount code is good through the end of April, which is EXTRZA24, gets you $50 off. This is a conference that talks about how faith, science, and ethics come together. I was able to be there last year. It was awesome. I'm hoping to get down there this year. I'm working on some of those details right now. It's an amazing opportunity for those high school students. If they haven't checked it out, again, links will be down in the show notes along with the coupon code. So I think there's a lot of ways we can approach this week. I think you could even take a look back to like last week and how we have the solar eclipse coming and how animals will take a look at how the solar eclipse happens and they think it's nighttime. It's time for the nocturnal animals to wake up, and suddenly they're surprised within this 3 to 4 hour window that suddenly you go from light to night to light again. This whole process can confuse the circadian rhythms of animals, and we talked a little bit about that last week. But I think there is another one that kind of came out this week out of Indonesia in the island of Java that I think helps reiterate a little bit of what we're going through here with Jesus that I think can give us some perspective. So let's talk about tigers. Currently, there are 6 subspecies, individual subspecies of tigers that are living. There are 3 subspecies that are known to be extinct: the Caspian, the Bali, and the Javan tigers. Each of these were in different areas. Caspian was more up by Turkey in that, but both the Javan and the Bali are islands in Indonesia that had tigers, and Javan and Bali were smaller tigers, on the smaller size, getting up to, on the biggest end, 300 pounds for the Javan tiger, but around like 220 to 300 pounds, which for tigers is on the smaller side. But as we have had people continue to move into these areas, there's been obviously different problems. In the 17th century, talked about colonists coming into these areas and how tigers were typically looking for, and there was bountiful prey, but human interaction with tigers was an issue, and there was a lot of deaths each year coming from tigers. And so thus, it kind of opened up this idea of hunting tigers, along with bringing in these European models of farming from the Netherlands that was clearing land and thus also doing some habitat degradation for tigers and for their prey, which makes it again harder and harder for these tigers. What kind of happened is as we roll into the 20th century, the tigers then were starting to move further and further south on this island to where they had this more preserve, this nature reserve. And the last what could be confirmed, quote, sighting, which was just tracks of the Javan tiger, was in 1976. So in the early 1980s, it was deemed extinct. The question is how do we know when something technically is extinct? And that's one of the things that is kind of being discussed at a lot of different levels. We've talked about it some here on the podcast. We've talked about the ivory-billed woodpecker. Is it that the land and their habitat has degraded so much that these now populations are just super small in super niche areas where people just aren't? Or have they truly passed away? It's hard for us to fully know with some of these creatures, especially if they were somewhat elusive to begin with. This has kind of been a continued thing that continues to go on. And when you take in Animal Planet shows like Extinct or Alive, which we know has some reality TV elements, at what point is it reality? And at what point are they pushing our understanding of what is reality? But it's also bringing up the idea of, are all these things truly extinct? And this last week, there was some interesting evidence that came out on questioning whether or not the Javan tiger is fully extinct. And what has happened from a sighting of some fur on a barbed wire fence in a West Javan city in 2019, they have done DNA analysis on this fur to show that yes, it's Javan tiger fur. Now, the problem that we're running into is there is some that are saying, well, this is enough evidence. There must be super small population of Javan tigers left on the island, especially since we haven't had a confirmed sighting, even of tracks, since the 1970s. We're talking 40 years. There has to be something here, nearly 50. Okay, then you have the other side where it's like, okay, yeah, but this is still really remote. And yes, we've been able to, with DNA analysis, show this and show that they were a unique subspecies of tiger. But is this really enough for us to be doing this and declaring they're unextinct. The issue that you then also run into is if the Javan tiger is not extinct, the next issue that you run into is, what do we do now? How do we have a conservation plan for these? We haven't seen them. We haven't studied them. How do we figure out what we do next? You have to have some type of conservation plan. And when we haven't seen these animals in decades, how do we even know what we need to be able to do? What are they doing? How are they adapting to their habitat and conservation? And what do we then do about what their prey has been? Since a lot of these places have also been affected by this, it leads to a huge trickle effect. And this isn't just unique to the Javan tiger. There has also been some rumblings of things similar with the Tasmanian tiger of Australia, which was a marsupial, which again, as then Europeans, mostly then from the UK, came in, brought in farming techniques, brought in dogs and other mammals, it pushed them into different areas. And now there is people who have stated they've seen them. But again, the evidence is kind of sparse potentially. Is it enough? There hasn't been necessarily a true photograph or something that has come through. But again, with having AI and different things, people then are even questioning, is a photograph a photograph? Is this enough evidence? And then the aspect of, there is some people who are saying in certain remote spots in Western Australia, in mountainous regions that are hard for people to get to, that there has been some guides and different things who have seen them, who have claimed to see them. There's been certain people who have claimed even decent biologists, but they haven't been able to get enough evidence, but they've said that they've seen them. It's this whole process of, what do you do if you've declared something is extinct, but now what is enough evidence to prove that no, it's not extinct, and that we're then able to take those next steps to move it to highly endangered type of status? And what do we have to do to be able to balance, to work within that and recognize, what do we do? Are we trying to bring it all the way back to what it was? Are we trying to maintain the population? There's a lot of ethical questions that come in with something like this, and it makes our head just spin. What do we do? And that's where, to me, when I am listening and looking at the story here of Thomas, I can see Thomas going through this. Heck, even the disciples, they are taken back by Jesus being there. Then they're, wow, this is amazing, but they're going to sound like crazy people. There's a reason they're locked away. They're trying to have the political climate settle down because they're wanted by association. And to suddenly have where Jesus is then appearing, they're going to have a hard time going out and just saying, we've seen Jesus, he's risen, so much for killing him. You're going to sound like a crazy person. And at what point are you going to be, you're going to have to physically show them? But when Jesus is appearing and disappearing, how are you going to be able to do that? What is this whole process? And this is where we then get right there at the end, this whole statement of faith that Jesus is getting at. Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and have come to believe. This is the difficult thing with how sometimes we even do science, but how we even do faith. Faith, there is this understanding that I can only understand and grasp so much. And at some point, I have to take this leap of faith to be able to just say, I can't fully understand it. I can't fully grasp it, but I'm going to believe this thing. I'm going to take the stance that Jesus did happen, and Jesus did die, and Jesus did rise for my sake, and what Jesus said, and I'm taking that leap of faith. There is enough there for me. But again, like every individual, there is a differing amount of what is needed for them to believe. When we are looking at speciation and looking at our different tiger species that we have not physically seen in person and had a confirmed sighting of, even though there has been reports of tiger attacks on the Javan Island or in Java, or having unconfirmed sightings of tigers, we haven't had a confirmed thing where people can agree that, yes, this happened in almost 50 years. But what is enough evidence to say, okay, there are here, and then what does that mean? Because now you have whole, like we talked about, conservation efforts and things to be considering and thinking about. At what point do you believe along that scale? Not everybody's going to come to believe at the same moment. And I can understand scientists. People love trying to cling on and hold on to things. And I can understand as a scientist where, okay, cool, you have a hair on a barbed wire fence that came back as this. I would want to see a little bit more potentially than just that. Who knows? Maybe someone had an old tiger rug or something and they shook it out and it got caught, or I don't know. There's plenty of weird things, but it's also very happenstantial that you find some and it's able to come back where, yes, it's a Javan tiger. We haven't had them on the island in nearly 50 years. What do we do about this? And I think that's right where the disciples are at. And I think there is so much of that within our own lives, the chaos and craziness of what 2024 and even the last 5 years has been. Things that if you had told us a decade ago would happen, people would be like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. But I think that's part of life. Part of this understanding that there are going to be things that it's hard for us to grasp, hard for us to wrap our heads around, hard for us to fully understand. And that's part of faith. There is a moment where on an individual scale, you have to say, this is enough for me to believe. But this is why the other texts are so important. And I think also it ties into a science community. We had three other texts that were talking about the value of community, the value of being together, the value of being able to bounce things off of each other, and that's important. It's important within a scientific community to not have everybody just saying, yes, this is what I believe, but also having those who are contradicting you and saying, is it really enough though? But also not just having people who are saying, is this really enough, but having people who are saying, well, I think it might actually be enough. Having that balance is so important, but it's also important to be able to eat and break bread together. Even though we are walking along this journey of faith, that sometimes we're going to have people not 100% agree with each other, but being able to recognize that they are brothers and sisters in Christ. They are siblings in Christ. We are all working together toward the same thing. And maybe you can't make that statement, but then maybe that's why I'm able to make that statement today. That's where I think it's also important, where this whole confession and forgiveness, this short order, if you're in different worshiping communities, short order of confession and forgiveness, coming out of verse 8 through 10 here of 1 John. This idea of sometimes I'm not going to be able to say it, but that's why I'm in community, because others will be able to say it on my behalf. And there's going to be days where I'm be able to say it where someone else is struggling to say it. That's part of faith. And yes, it gets sticky with science because, yes, we sometimes have things where it's either black or white, yes or no. But what is enough to be that yes or no is going to vary person to person. And that's why you have scientific papers. That's why you have people coming together to work on these different things. That's why you have discussions around this stuff and then trying to figure out what is the best approach to be able to have enough people to slowly get where people can say, yes, that's enough. I can agree with that. And you still might not get everybody, but get enough that it's the majority is a thing. And understanding that that's going to be a person-to-person thing, it's going to be a process, but supporting people in that process. I think this text and thinking about it and contemplating it, Thomas gives us so much. Thomas shouldn't be called out for doubting. Thomas should be raised up for being human. Because what does Thomas actually show us? Thomas shows it is okay for us to be human and to question and have wonder why and is this enough? Just as we are going through with various different species, is this enough to declare it unextinct? I don't know. I have video footage of this other leopard, but it's coming from Animal Planet and they aren't giving enough information. Is this really a thing? There is a lot of question and that's okay. That's part of the process. That's part of the process of curiosity and knowledge acquisition, is questioning and wondering and thinking and contemplating, and is this enough? I think that's one of the things that we have to keep working on ourselves. When we are in this thing of faith, how often we need to be able to do the same thing. We need to be able to question and think about and wonder, is this enough for me personally? But then also for those who don't, being okay and satisfied at times that maybe they aren't there yet, but still being able to support them and carry them through and help them. Sometimes it's not sitting there and just being a convincing argument. Sometimes it's just being there with them. Let your love and care be that thing that helps carry them. Do we see in this whole argument and thing that the disciples then ridiculed and cast out Thomas because he doubted? No. They understand and how hard this would be to grapple with, to get their head around. So what do? They accept where Thomas is at and say, be around us, spend some time with us, and maybe it'll happen again. Maybe we'll have enough evidence to be able to show you that. So the question I have for you this week is, where are you currently grappling with faith? Where are you currently grappling with faith? I think when we look at scientific communities, that's the best thing about it, is even when you think you have figured something out, we've talked about this time and time again, it leads to more questions. It leads to things to be thinking about, contemplating, considering, to be able to potentially think about, contemplate, bring together in a new way. Constantly trying to figure out new questions, new answers, new things to try to be understanding. Being critical in a good way. I think these are all valid things to be thinking about and contemplating. And if we aren't doing that within our own faith, what are we actually doing? If we aren't doing that within a community, what are we actually doing? We're not growing then. There has to be some type of struggle at times with our own faith. There has to be moments where we're wrestling with things, because if we aren't, how do we grow? Life is resilient, like we talked about in the question from last week, but also being resilient means that you need to be able to fight and work hard and wrestle with life. And so, yes, right now, the Javan tiger, is it extinct? Huge question mark. I don't know. I'm assuming most of you on the other end of this don't know. We'll keep an eye peeled to it. It's exciting to potentially have it happening. I don't know, for me, when there will be enough evidence where I can say, yep, I'm all in. But I will say, for me personally, even just having fur on a barbed wire fence, from the little bits and pieces that I'm seeing, that's optimistic. That's definitely greater than 0% possibility for me. And actually, that's decently high, because how else would it have gotten there? But that's me. That's from my background. That's from my scientific background and my understanding. I've listened to other people who are like, it's back, baby. Javan Tiger is all the way back. And I'm not there yet. And that's okay. But I think that's, again, the value of what we're talking about here. This is the value of Thomas showing that it is okay for us not to all be just immediately on board. And I think this wrestling and grappling with the faith is so important, and especially in a world in which we're in today, I think it shows that we don't always have to have split reaction, understanding, and immediately make opinions. Sometimes it takes some time, and it is okay to also change your opinion over time as well. Because Thomas obviously changes his own opinion. And I think in the world in which we're in, moving faster and faster and faster, these are things for us to be contemplating and considering that can be very helpful for us to be able to understand the true revelation of Jesus rising from the dead, doing something completely unexpected. Do we have some of these extinct species that we have cast aside for decades that maybe are still alive in remnant populations? Possibly. Does that potentially give us the opportunity to work with other professionals to figure out how do we explore these possibilities in an unobtrusive way, and maybe they be able to figure out if they are still around, how do we conserve them? Yeah. Is that exciting? Yes. Is that part of what the resurrection is all about? I would argue yes. I would argue that it's the revelation of us being able to go and explore and find what is new. Because we have become a new creation through what Christ has done for us. So go and explore and figure out what that means. And if God created and it's still around when we thought it was gone, then why wouldn't we maybe send select fuse to try to reduce the amount of damage to the environment that they're in, if they're that protected, conserved, or small population? But it's also exciting to potentially see what else is out there and what can we find. So go out and explore, because you never know what you're going to find. So, we'll wrap this up as we always do. I pray God blesses you through your faith and amazes you through science.